Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to see what the 1st Brigade Combat Team is planning, learn about soldiers and veterans' mental health initiatives, and check in with the Think Great Foundation. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
A little more than 100 years ago, in the blowing sands of the New Mexico desert, our Army formed the unit now known as our 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. While they were initially known as the Sandstorm Division, it was during World War II the division earned its current name and its current motto. As the 34th fought across North Africa and Italy, their wary enemy bemoaned that all the unrelenting Red Bulls would do was attack, then attack, then attack. Today, proud Red Bulls across our state and nation carry on the legacy earned by our veterans, those that fought tirelessly during World War II, Iraq, and Afghanistan. To all of those who have and those that continue today to wear the Red Bull patch, I thank you for your dedication, your sacrifice, and your service. Red Bulls, attack, attack, attack.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the commander of the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team, which is part of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Colonel Tim Kemp. Colonel, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tom, and to represent the soldiers of the 1st 34th Armored Brigade Combat Team.
Well, and as the Adjutant General just said, your slogan is attack, attack, attack.
And it's become a pure culture inside of our organization. So you're
ready all the time, sir.
That's right. That's correct.
All right, Colonel, we've had you on the show before, but some of our listeners might not recognize you. How long have you been in the military?
Just crested over 21 years, just recently. So
part of that was active duty?
Yeah, active duty initially with the cavalry. Spent some time at Fort Hood and Fort Knox, Kentucky, and then transitioned back here to Minnesota through ROTC, became AGR soldier, and then back out to the field here with Combined Arms Battalion, the brigade, and the division headquarters and headquarters here at the state headquarters.
And Colonel, so our listeners can understand, is my observation that as you get promoted from captain to major lieutenant colonel, you spend 3 years here and 3 years there and 3 years there, and you're moved around and moved up. If you make the grade and you get promoted, you get another command.
Well, you've been watching closely, Tom. So yeah, about 3 years, 2 to 3 years, sometimes 4 years if you're lucky and you really enjoy the job. You're in place in a position, and then usually schooling in between those at every level. You know, lieutenant to captain, captain to major. There's another military school you have to go to develop and be tested. And then you continue to move on and hopefully be challenged some more.
And now you're a brigade commander, the 1st Armored Brigade, First Armored Brigade Combat Team. Hard for a civilian to say. Sorry, sir. Could you tell us about the 1st ABC and your capabilities and how many soldiers that you command?
Yeah, the 1st 34th Armored Brigade Combat Team is made up of 7 battalions. We have 3 combined arms battalions, a fires battalion, sustainment battalion, an engineer battalion, and then we've got also 2135 infantry, which is a Minnesota organization that has its pedigree back to the 1st Minnesota. So they're a part of our organization, but they also train with 2nd Brigade of 34th out of Iowa. So approximately about 5,300 soldiers are all part of the 1st 34th Armored Brigade Combat Team.
So they're spread all across Minnesota and Iowa?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, if almost every community or region, I should say, in the state. So we've got battalions in the northeast. We've got 94 Cav and up in Duluth and that whole area in the northeast, northwest with 2136, and down south with 1125 FA and 2135 infantry, and then all over the cities area, too. So we're pretty much cover the state.
They already got me lost on that one.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, do you have artillery? Do you have, I know you're armored brigade combat team, so you have access to some heavy equipment?
Oh, yes, definitely. So, yeah, we have, well, tanks and Bradleys are the basis of our combat platforms, maneuver platforms. But then we also have 155-millimeter howitzers or paladins that can shoot on the move for our artillery. And then none of that moves or fights without all of our sustainment elements we have, which actually the largest part of our formation is our sustainment elements that repair and supply and provide for all of our maneuver elements, along with our enablers.
We're speaking with Colonel Tim Kemp, the commander of the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team on Minnesota Military Radio. And Colonel, we've watched over the last nine years where the 1st ABCT went out, and when they come back, fortunately, we've got a facility up at Camp Ripley with a huge maintenance facility, and, mm-hmm. and they're pretty integral to what you're doing and being ready.
Yeah, that's a key to our success. You know, we just talked about all of the combat platforms and vehicles and equipment we have. Well, it doesn't run without being supplied, and it doesn't continue to run without the maintenance and parts that it takes to keep all of that running on a regular basis. So as you can imagine, when we're out doing what we need to do out in the woods or out in the desert, things break, and they break rapidly the heavier the vehicle. And if we didn't have our maintenance teams both within our formation and then what we have for our sustainment and support up at Camp Ripley, we wouldn't be able to do what we need to do.
And, Colonel, it's my opinion, just from interviewing so many people over the years, that we've got one of the best facilities in the country up in Camp Ripley. That's got to be a real advantage for the Minnesota National Guard.
It is, and it's fully capable. It gets us to right about the level that we need to before we have to go out to do our capstone events, whether it's at National Training Center or Fort Hood, Texas later this summer. So, and then the customer service up there, led by General Cruz and his team, is phenomenal. So we try to keep it private. Don't let other people know that how great Camp Ripley is, so we have more availability. But we understand that Camp Ripley needs to be utilized and supported. And so, no, it's we're blessed to have that and the support that we have up there.
Well, it's a state asset that's used by the Minnesota National Guard. And also, as you say, the Iowa National Guard comes up. But we mm-hmm. also have the Highway Patrol up there,
correct.
Homeland Security.
Correct.
The DOT goes up there and trains for snow plowing. It's a wonderful asset for the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, correct. And it's nice to see all of the soldiers and officers and workers that support the state of Minnesota together all have one location to be and to get to know each other.
And, Colonel, we've witnessed over the last 9 years of doing this show that we're constantly deploying troops from the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard. And just to follow up on the Camp Ripley thought, I've been told that because we have that facility, your soldiers and airmen can train closer to home and have fewer days away, even when they do go on deployments.
Yeah, and that's critical. We're trying to, you know, we have soldiers that are also, of course, citizens, and they're also have a civilian employer and their families at home. And we want to minimize the impact as much as possible and on the employers and on the families. So being able to use Camp Ripley and to do most of our training there, about 80% of our training can all be conducted there, it allows us to do that and do what the nation's asking us to do, the training level we need to be, but then get the soldiers home to their employers and their families.
Sir, several decades ago when I was came off active duty and joined the 133rd Air National Guard, that was still weekends, one weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summertime. But since 9/11, things have really changed. And the deployment cycles over the last 18 years, there's been a basic change. I know the soldiers understand mm-hmm. if they sign up, they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what's happened with active duty Army, Guard, and Reserves that's caused that real basic change?
Yeah, it's a shift in overall global strategic threat, you know, to use the Secretary of Defense's term and what he's taken a look at the threat that we have to face now, even though we're not in deep as much as we were in Iraq before in the past. Obviously, we're still there and we're operating there. And people are used to those normal deployment cycles we used to have. We have a threat, three or four other serious threats that are near peer when it comes to our capabilities. So we have to increase our overall proficiency. And the Armored Brigade combat teams and other units within the Guard are key to being a operational reserve. In other words, if something were to happen, we would be there with our active duty counterparts.
So you're a true partner. The one Army, as they call it, is active duty Guard Reserve.
Correct.
And you have to be trained and ready to go.
Correct. The training centers that we go to and the evaluation centers that we have to go through are exactly the same as the active component. So we're tested, and they are needed to be at the same level as our active component folks who do this full time. So we're trying to balance it all and be successful. And so far, I've been blessed with some great, great soldiers that are making it happen.
Well, and your soldiers are resilient, and I hope their families and their employers are, because it's probably going to continue for a while.
Yeah, right now it doesn't seem to be slowing down at all when it comes to what they call the sustained readiness model. So
no end in sight that you can see.
Yeah, this has become our steady state right now as to what we have to continue to accomplish.
Sir, I want to talk about you just had a warfighter exercise up at Camp Ripley, and you've got a couple other major things coming up, XCTC and NTC, and I promised you I wouldn't use acronyms.
I'll explain them for you.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about all the things that you're doing and what's coming up so our listeners can understand how hard your soldiers are working.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
We're speaking with Colonel Tim Kemp on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Colonel Tim Kemp, who is the commander of the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team, which is part of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. And Colonel, there's another little basic nuance here. We think about the Minnesota National Guard, and that's one organization, but then the division is separate. And the division is made up of a lot of the Minnesota National Guard.
Yes.
But a lot of other units around the region and in the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the division has what's called not only the units that are within the state, but a line for training relationships with multiple units. So they have, when they're back here and they're not deployed, which they presently are, they actually have just as many or more units that they're there to support and coordinate and to train. And they provide guidance to out-state units.
So they go several states around, I think, out as far as even, what, Wyoming or Montana?
Yeah, Idaho, Wisconsin, South Dakota, North Dakota. And so it's a good group of folks, and it ends up being quite a great marriage of organizations and states in order to try to accomplish what we need to do, because we're also very busy. We always need additional resources like personnel, and those relationships come in handy in order to support each other.
Yeah, knowing each other, sometimes we send some aircraft out to fight fighters in the West and things like that. But, sir, we want to talk about the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team. How many combat teams are there in the National Guard?
There's 4 Armored Brigade Combat Teams and 2 Striker Brigade Combat Teams, and then there's 18 Infantry Combat Teams in the National Guard. So,
okay, so then you go through training rotation every 3 or 4 years where you do similar things, and the younger officers and the younger NCOs and everybody get to move up a little bit and see how they do compared to their predecessors.
Yeah, so we're in our second cycle of a 4-year sustained readiness model cycle for Armored Brigade Combat Teams. So we have the division and us and the Aviation Brigade have a 4-year cycle. So like you've been, you experienced in the past, we went to, did an XCTC at Camp Ripley before, and then did National Training Center. Well, we're back right into that cycle again, so we'll be doing the XCTC this year, a National Training Center event next year. And at that point, we'll be the most ready Armored Brigade Combat Team in the Army based on coming out of the National Training Center. And at that point, then, if you're the most ready, your patch is towards the top when the force comm commander is trying to decide who needs to go somewhere.
Congratulations. You did a good job. You're well-trained. Now go do this next mission.
We're not going to waste the money we spent on getting you ready. Yeah.
Now, you just finished an exercise called Warfighter, and I think the last time I saw that, that wasn't at Camp Ripley. That was somewhere else?
Yeah, we did this at Camp Ripley. It just got done a couple weeks ago. And what it is the Warfighter is a simulation exercise. So we set up all of our operation centers or mission command centers and nodes and tents and in trucks. So if you think of the leadership are there trying to plan and maneuver the elements in the field. So we go out just like you would be in combat, and then they have a simulation that pumps in the data. And so all of our systems make it look as though it's really a war going on out there. And then we have to report based on what's going on and make decisions and then maneuver those units in the simulation in order to track the battle and fight. So it's a great test of the brigade staff and the battalion staffs.
So you were actually fighting against the computer simulation.
Correct.
Set up to just cause you all kinds of
headaches. Oh, yes. They have more than enough combat power to stress out the brigade staff and myself. So
how long did that exercise take, sir?
It was 10 days total for the exercise. You're in the simulation for 4 or 5 days, but you have to prepare for it and the orders. And it simulates you just arrived in country, and now you're going into battle.
So during the heat of it in those 4 or 5 days, people didn't get too much sleep, I'm guessing.
You sleep when you can. Yeah. in between decisions or in between, meetings that you have to be at and strive for.
How did we do? Did you knock it out of the park?
Did well. So the brigade was validated proficient for in its battle staff tasks. So that's a great achievement by all the staff and those that worked. And the battalions also were considered extremely proficient. So we've got the nod that we're prepared to go to a National Training Center or deploy, and that the brigade staff and battalion staffs are proficient to do so.
We're speaking with Colonel Tim Kemp, commander of the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team on Minnesota Military Radio. What's up next, sir? Is this XCTC?
Yeah, so that one's a hard one to explain. So it stands for Exportable Combat Training Center. So when we talk about National Training Center, this is a mini version of that we're going to conduct at Fort Hood this year in August, August 2nd through the 23rd. And so right now we're loading up the entire brigade at Camp Ripley to rail load all of our equipment, our platforms, and all the supplies and individual soldier equipment to transport all that down to Fort Hood. And down at Fort Hood, we'll conduct company-level maneuver. So a company's 14 tanks or 14 Bradleys with all the squad, dismount squads that are behind it, or our batteries that are six cannons, they'll all be doing their austere, decisive action, real combat-type tasks, and they'll be evaluated. So then, now the companies are evaluated, the battalion and the brigade have been evaluated, and the brigade warfighter, and then now we're prepared to step into NTC next year.
Sounds to me, sir, like logistics is critical.
Huge. Yeah, it's 80-85% of the battle.
You got to get the soldiers down there. You got to get the equipment down there. You got to feed them. You got to send the water. You got to have ammunition. You got to have everything you need. And, of course, Fort Hood is, I'm told, pretty austere, but a place where you can run your tanks.
Yeah, it's Fort Hood is one of the largest training areas for armored vehicles and platforms and units that we have in the country, that and National Training Center. So we'd be able to get down there and do our company-level maneuver with enough lanes that we can get down there and back in 21 days and train all of our companies in the brigade, which is critical, like I mentioned earlier, Tom, to get them back to their employers and their families, but at the same time achieve the combat readiness that we need to have.
And you're showing the speed and the logistics, and you can get out in the field with the tanks and do the things that you want to do,
yeah,
and then get back. And, of course, we're putting more pressure on your soldiers and their families and their employers. But you've also got your next in line, or you're in the rotation to go to the National Training Center, which is the top of the readiness platform, as I understand it.
Yeah, that is to me, from my experience, the most difficult training event that a unit can do that prepares you the best for what your unit is going to maybe called on to do. So they have the opposing force out there, which is the Black Horse Regiment, they call themselves, Living ACR. Yeah, and they train and pride themselves to be able to simulate the worst case scenario of an enemy that you would have to face based on the present threats in the world. And they do a very, very good job on their own terrain fighting. So
you get your soldiers and you get all the equipment and you're out in the desert.
Yes.
And you're up against the best the Army has, and they're not going to make it easy yet.
No. They're going to try to do things that we haven't seen before, and it's our job to try to defeat that or destroy that as we maneuver and show them a few things they haven't seen before.
And we send trains of equipment and planes full of soldiers out there. And the important part is when it's done and you've beat that active duty Army unit, you got to get all that equipment back home and get it ready for the next event.
Yeah, correct. And so when we come back, we have to maintain that training proficiency and that readiness, which means our soldiers and our equipment have to get back to 90% plus or 100% readiness as fast as possible when we get back. So the effort doesn't stop once we leave. We come back here and it's getting soldiers back through their medical and making sure they're ready, and then also getting our equipment back up to operational readiness rate standards.
And that maintenance facility up in Camp Ripley is really important, but they know what to expect. Well, they've been through it.
They've been through it. Every year we've sent the majority of the brigade somewhere and done this type of maneuver and training off-road with all of our vehicles.
So they're ready.
And they're ready. They know exactly what to expect. And the Army has come around to the point where we're able to get our parts and stuff in a more timely manner. And so we're looking forward to getting back to readiness and then seeing what the Army has to hold for us beyond that.
Sir, we've only got a couple minutes left, but the theme running through this entire discussion is we've been sending people every year for 18 years or more, and there's no end in sight. You're going to be busy for this year, next year, and the year after, probably deployed somewhere by Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Put a lot of stress on your soldiers and your family and their citizen soldiers. They have a job. How are the employers holding up?
Yeah, the employers, I mean, the key thing that I want to share with the employers is, you know, these are your soldiers. You know, you provide them, you support them, and they're part of this contribution to both our state with the state missions we've conducted this past year with Flood Fight and some of the winter events that we've had to support folks, and then also the federal mission that we're tasked to do that the Secretary of Defense has determined that he needs the National Guard and the Armored Brigade Combat Teams to support in order to deter our threats. And it's the employers that then provide those soldiers. And I acknowledge the sacrifice that they're gone and they fill in while they're gone to continue to do what they need to do. So I want to thank them for allowing us to utilize their soldier that stands in their corporation every week to go do what we have to do. And we'll get them back to you better trained and hopefully even healthier when they come home.
Sir, I have one final observation, and that's this. I was in active duty Air Force, and then I was in the Guard. And when we see active Army go out on missions, those soldiers have their duty, and that's what they do. When National Guard units like yours go out on missions, They have their duty within the Army, but they've also got expertise from being in civilian jobs. So you've got people, you've got farmers, you've got electricians, you've got IT people, you've got all kinds. It seems to me that if there's trouble, you're better able to handle it because of the diversity of the force than maybe active duty. But perhaps I'm biased.
It's a bias that's supported by some reality, Tom. And the fact, for example, in a brigade warfighter, we were one of the very first brigades that all of our IT systems were up early before the battle started and stayed up the entire time. And a big part of that is the fact that a lot of our folks that work on our systems in our SIC shops, we call it, they also do that during the week in the civilian world.
So they're very good at it.
They're extremely good at it. Some of them are actually more qualified than need to be for what we're asking them to do. So they actually are able to do the work of two instead of just one.
So then as a commander, you want to know what their job is here and what their job is there. And let's put everybody to the best use when we're called upon.
Yeah. Sometimes if you have an interesting, ambiguous problem, the first thing you do is look at your guard formation and say, who's got any expertise in this? And sometimes you'll have a guy who'll pop up who knows how to speak Polish or an individual who understands how to do supply chain management. You know, you never know.
Well, Colonel, it's been a pleasure to have you in the studio today, and I hope all these future adventures go real well. I'm sure they will. You've got some great Red Bull soldiers that are resilient. They're going to hang in there, and they're going to do a great job. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for what you do.
This is Colonel Tim Kemp, the commander of the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn about soldier and veteran mental health initiatives. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk about soldier and veteran mental wellness. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Minnesota has a unique team of organizations who collaborate together to find and house homeless veterans. A key tool for these organizations is the Minnesota Homeless Veteran Registry, which helps these organizations to assist veterans who are experiencing homelessness and need access to stable housing. Participation is voluntary for veterans, and anyone can refer a veteran to join. For more information and to access referral forms, please visit Minnesota Homeless Veterans Registry page at minnesotaveteran.org. Ending veterans homelessness is a focus for Governor Walz and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I am proud of the progress the team has made, but I won't be satisfied till we're able to declare the end of veteran homelessness statewide. Anyone who knows a homeless veteran can call 1-888-LINK-VET. That's 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to talk about soldier and veteran mental wellness, and joining us to talk about that is Tamara Udy, who is the behavioral health officer for the Minnesota Army National Guard and also a captain. So, Captain, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Can you share with us what kind of educational requirements are there to become a behavioral health officer?
Right. So I have my master's in social work from the University of Minnesota. Also, I'm completing my master's in public affairs leadership from the Humphrey Institute. So I currently serve, as you stated, as a captain, behavioral health officer for the battalion support brigade. So Colonel Kep under, his brigade that will be participating in the exercises this summer as well.
So your duties, just like the maintenance crew up at Camp Ripley has to take care of all the equipment, you're there to make sure that our soldiers are in great shape mentally and ready to go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how long have you been in the military?
Going on 2.5 years now. So I was a direct commission to the Minnesota Army National Guard.
Which means you came out of college.
So what that means is that I received my education, got licensed as a clinical social worker, and then after that was recruited directly in as a captain to the Minnesota Army National Guard.
Well, that's pretty nice. Start out as a captain and go from there. Are you having fun with it?
Oh, I love it.
And how are our soldiers? What kind of shape are they in?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that there's several different trends that are going on. We've been working in behavioral health for well over 8 years in the Minnesota Army National Guard, really tweaking and refining what we do in our programs. One of the most current trends that we have is soldiers who, you know, are describing a lot of anxiety, depressive symptoms, surrounding, you know, everyday civilian life, whether it be finances, whether it be relationships, job, managing all of their duties on the military and civilian side. So we see that pretty frequently. One of the things that we really try to work hard at is really working with the soldier before it becomes a crisis. So working with them as they are developing some symptoms and working on coping mechanisms, skills to somewhat reverse those symptoms that they're experiencing.
So, Captain, just as an observer over 9 years of doing the show, mm-hmm. we see that our Army National Guard soldiers are citizen soldiers. They mm-hmm. most of them have families, spouses, children. They have civilian jobs. Mm-hmm. They're called upon to do more than just one weekend a month and two weekends in the summer. There are repeated deployments over the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. I see that as a recipe for some issues.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And how
Absolutely.
Can they be so resilient? And there's no end in sight. There's more jobs coming up, as Colonel Kemp told us.
Right. Absolutely. All these things combined just create more stressors. And I think the main way to combat that, that recipe for disaster, as you say, is being proactive with it. So, for example, a large amount of soldiers who will be going to the exercises down at Fort Hood this summer, we're really working with them now. And working with their families now and how they manage that situation, to think about how things that may come up during their time away and how to be proactive with it. And it's not just the soldier, as you're saying, it's the employer, it's the family and children and extended family and friends that also will be under more stress while they're deployed or away at different exercises. So it's about being proactive. And that's our number one, if I could say there's like a secret ingredient in the recipe. It's about being proactive. It's about thinking about these situations beforehand. So often we think about physical fitness in the military. We think about training for our, you know, PT tests. We think about doing push-ups and sit-ups and running. But we don't think about our mental wellness in the same way. We only think about it when it's gotten to a point of crisis, unfortunately. And so our job and what we've really refined over the last several years now is being proactive in that pursuit.
We're speaking with Captain Tamara Udy on Minnesota Military Radio. And Captain, it seems to me that in your position, watching out for the behavioral health of our soldiers, along with the Chaplains Corps, which does a great job to talk yes. about the religious aspects, those things, seems to me, just from an observer, I don't have your training, that our soldiers need to get into a place in their mind or a state of mind where this is the new normal. Their family has to get there. Their employers have to get there saying, okay, we've elected, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And so how do we balance all of these things and how do we keep it healthy and how do we stay resilient over a mm-hmm. period of time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's gone from this 2 weeks a year, one weekend a month, job, so to speak, to much more than that. And I think it's about expectations going in. So, you know, I think soldiers going in now are aware that the commitment is very different than it was prior to 9/11. And so I think the communication, I think the being proactive and the balancing it all. There's no secret recipe or ingredient here. But once again, if you can do one thing, it's about being proactive. That's something that we work hard on the behavioral health side is going in and working with soldiers before there's issues, whether it's briefings or, you know, working one-on-one.
Well, Captain, we've had experts on. We've talked about suicide prevention on the show quite a few times. And one of the things we talk about is watching for a change in your veteran, watching for some depression, watching for something that's out of the ordinary. Does that apply to this as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, anything from changing in sleep habits, eating habits, not wanting to be involved in whether it's, you know, normal group situations or social situations, all of those are perfect signs that, you know, they're experiencing, whether it be anxiety or depression symptoms. And so those are very important things to look out for, whether it's your battle buddy, whether it's your spouse or your friend.
So if we observe something or see something and we call you, mm-hmm. do you have methodology? Do you have the means? Do you have the ability to help solve those issues?
Absolutely. So we have a point of contact for every single unit in the Minnesota Army National Guard who is a licensed mental health professional. And they're available. They go to weekend drills. They're well connected with each of these units. This has been going on for a number of years now. And like I said earlier, it's about refining what is happening because our population in the National Guard is changing. We see, you know, different generations come in with different needs and different upbringings, and that looks different. And so we have to change our programming as the force changes as well.
Captain, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk some more about soldier and veteran mental health wellness on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to a behavioral health officer for the Minnesota National Guard, Captain Tamara Udy, and we've been talking about soldier and veteran mental wellness. And I wanted to ask you, Captain, are there resources within and outside of the Minnesota National Guard that are available if you find one of your soldiers is having some issues and maybe they need some inpatient work for a week or so? Or are there places to send them to help work through the issues?
Well, so depending on what's going on with the individual soldier, you know, whether it's outpatient needs or inpatient needs, we'll definitely direct and guide them in that process. And so, you know, there is a what we call a psychological health coordinator assigned to each unit. And that individual who is a clinical mental health professional will guide them to those resources as needed. We're also on call 24/7. So if there is a crisis, each unit has that key person who can direct us and make sure that, you know, they get our expertise involved and get the soldier where they need to be.
So if they need help, they contact their unit readiness NCO, and they'll know who to send them
Roger,
to.
Roger, yeah.
Now, is there a stigma attached to this? In the old days when I was in the military, in the Air Force, if you had some type of battle problems or PTS, we didn't even know they called it that then. Mm-hmm. A lot of the guys didn't want to come forward because they wanted to stay in and they didn't want to get identified as somebody that was crazy or had a problem.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so the stigma has been changing. It definitely has. It's not the way it was 20 years ago. We can credit that to, you know, the large amount of soldiers who have unfortunately come back with a significant amount of mental health concerns. And what we know is that you know, that it's not a lasting, this is like a terminal situation. It's about rehabilitation and recovery and resilience with that. So, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, we were told to drive on, move forward, keep on going. It's all in your head, right? And now the way we're looking at this is it's just like a physical health symptom. It's just like high blood pressure. It's just like, you know, chronic back pain in the sense that, you know, you have treatment for it. You can recover and rehabilitate from it, and ignoring it only makes it worse.
So let's identify it, take it out, look at it, work through it, and then continue on with your career.
Right.
All right. That's very good. Now, my next question goes to, we've learned over the last few years that more and more women are joining the military, and even in the Minnesota National Guard, it's over 20% now, which is huge compared to decades ago when I was
right.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Are they having any different issues or any unique issues separate from the men?
I think the stressors are, of course, as we talked about earlier, as the days and the hours get longer, as we're gone for longer periods of time, there's different challenges that come to women, especially, you know, women who may have family at home. And I don't want to say that my experience is like another woman in the military. I think that the stressors are different. And I think that women may experience mental health symptoms differently. They may come home to a different situation. And so it is a different experience. And with that, there has to be different treatment and different ideas of what may help that individual as well.
So you watch that, recognize it, work through it, get back to work.
Right.
Now, is there any way we can strengthen our mental health, not just the soldiers, but any of us? We all have stresses in our lives.
Yeah. So I referred to it earlier that it's like a muscle, right? And so there's lots of ways to strengthen it. And when we strengthen it and it's a stronger muscle, when things come around in our life that are challenging, that would cause, you know, whether it's a death or it's an illness, it allows us to use that muscle and it doesn't wind up in such a crisis situation that it may have been. So things such as, you know, eating well, exercising, sleeping. I mean, those are basic things that we know for both our physical wellness and our mental wellness are good. Socializing, having a group of support people, talking about what is going on in our life.
So it's all about becoming more resilient,
right?
And being able to not get your highs so high and your lows so low, and right, work through things and move on to the next. Captain, we're about out of time. I appreciate you stopping by the studio today, and good luck taking care of all of our soldiers.
Thank you.
That was Captain Tamara Udy on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Eric Thurwanger from the Think Great Foundation. Eric, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Appreciate you having me on.
Eric, I understand that you're in business for yourself. You've written some books. You put on some seminars. You've worked with a lot of big corporations. And more importantly, you are a Marine.
Yes, sir. Once a Marine, always a Marine. Yes, back 87 to 91 I was in.
And now you're doing some things with an organization called Think Great Foundation to help benefit our military spouses. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Yeah, we award scholarships to military spouses.
And how did this
say thank you for all their sacrifices?
Well, I think that's a great idea. How did this come about? How did you start this foundation? What caused you to think about this issue?
You know, I've been hired by different branches of the service to do family readiness programs, so I do a lot of work on goal setting with service members and their spouses, and I've had the opportunity to get to know spouses, learn about their goals, and hear a lot about their challenges. And the more that I met with them, I realized I wanted to do something for them to help support them. And it became quickly clear that helping them get their education back on track would be an amazing step in the right direction.
Eric, I'm sure you've seen that as one military spouse goes through their career and they move from base to base and put in a long career, sometimes the spouses go along for the ride, and at some point they need to take care of themselves.
I completely agree, and I think so many of them have so many amazing goals, and they've put those educational goals or even career goals on hold, and we're looking forward to really starting something special that is going to begin here in Minnesota and hopefully spread elsewhere, but will help recognize them for their true commitments and get them back on track with their education goals.
So you started Think Great Foundation. Information can be found at thinkgreatfoundation.org. Now, is that a nonprofit?
It is. It is. We are a registered 501c3 and did that about a year and a half ago. So we'll be doing our first gala this year to award scholarships out.
It says here that you're dedicated to awarding scholarships to military spouses. How do you go about raising funds for that?
So we've kind of started a grassroots movement right now. We have a lot of connections in the military community and also as a business coach in the business community. So we've spread the word that way. And currently we've raised about $13,000 just by sharing what we're doing, and another $12,000 to go by the time Veterans Day hits. But it's been a word of mouth campaign to start, but we're hoping to get that grassroots movement going even stronger now.
So what is the size of the scholarships that you're going to be awarding?
So they're going to range anywhere from probably about 500 to 2,500. And we're going to look at scholarships for not only universities and colleges, but also trade schools too.
So I understand you're planning an event for later this year around Veterans Day.
Yes, sir. We are going to be teaming up with the Lakeville Chamber for an event on that day, probably for about 2.5 hours over the lunch hour. And we're looking at having some military guests out, including some families of the spouses that we're going to be awarding scholarships to. So we're in that selection process right now, and spouses can actually register to qualify at our website immediately.
And once again, that's thinkgreatfoundation.org.
Yes.
Now, is there information on that website about this event that's coming up?
We are about to put some up, so we're just about ready to lock down the location. It will be in the Lakeville area. But we will have the location locked down probably today, if not by Monday. And that'll all be going on the website.
So you're trying to raise funds so you can give out these scholarships. Are you also looking for volunteers?
We are looking for volunteers. Yeah, people can actually contact us through the website if they'd like and volunteer their time on that day or leading up to it. We would love to have some people supporting this effort.
Now, Eric, when you give out these scholarships, are the military spouses using that to pay for tuition, or are they using it for books, or are they just using it for some extra funds so that they can get back to school?
Currently, we're being set up to pay for their tuition. So we're going to go right through the organization that they are going to school for, and we'll make payments on their behalf to the organization for them, to the academic organization for them.
Hey, Eric, we got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts about thinkgreatfoundation.org?
I think just the feedback that we've gotten has been phenomenal. When people learn that we are here to support the education goals of military spouses, it really opens their eyes up to a community, the mill spouse community, that many of us have, some of us have forgotten about or not, we don't think about enough. And so we're really looking to not only help them with their education goals, but also give them a voice and be able to share a little bit more about their story.
All right. Good luck, Marine. I hope you raise lots of money and give out plenty of scholarships.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate the time today. Have a good one.
Thank you. We have one mention today, the 2019 Armed Forces Family Fun Celebration, AUSA birthday party at Lord Fletcher's Lake Minnetonka will be held Thursday, June 13th. This event honors our military personnel, veterans, active military, reserve, and retired, including wounded warriors, with a guided fishing day on Lake Minnetonka. Volunteers and boat guides are still needed for this event. Visit fishingforlife.org to sign up and be a volunteer to help make this a great event. We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Colonel Tim Kemp from the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team, Captain Tamara Udy, Eric Thurwanger, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about the upcoming Patriot Ride and check in with the Family Assistance Centers here in Minnesota. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.